Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 57 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Little Eddie from the Super Live Adventure Podcast. Welcome back, Eddie.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back.
Just, all right.
You know, roll everything out to Runway 29er.
Yeah. I'm hoping we can save this plane.
I don't think they're rolling stuff out to save the plane. I think they have other things in mind. But we'll get there. So, Minute 57 begins with John continuing to be heroic and ends with a wing being engulfed in flames. So yesterday we ended things off with John, you know, creating two flares and trying to flag down the plane that maybe they will notice that they are not as low as they think they are. I don't know. Or maybe they will realize that they are lower than they are. I don't know.
A valiant but ultimately fruitless effort.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. This is the real downer that we're about to get into right now.
Yeah. But hey, you chose this week, so you can't complain about that.
No. This is true. You know, this is the heart of the movie right now.
Yes, it really is. And so, you know, we see John still trying to wave off the plane. And then we get a lot of, you know, airplane jargon between Colmini and the other two guys. He goes, approach flaps, approach speed, 140, approach speed, 140, 130, altitude, 1,000 feet.
Oh, and the tragedy is you're sitting there. It's like, oh, these guys are doing their job. They're doing it well. And they have no idea. You have no idea. That's right.
Well, at least they were wearing their seatbelts.
yeah. But everyone just like in control is just telling no. You're too low.
Right. Well, that's the thing that's even more gut wrenching. You know, the fact that they're sitting there and they know the truth. So you have that, you know, the guy on looking at the ILS system and he's like, you're only at 800, guys. You know, which that I think is even more heartbreaking. To listen to that,
yeah,
you know, because they're letting them listen to everything as it's going on.
Yeah, pulling at your heartstrings.
You know, you think right he's there. Like, mm-hmm. That's right. You think he would try to maybe look away. I don't know. It's not really going to help. And what's great is, did you see that there's like a little cartoon that's sitting that he has on his dashboard. Now, I can't read what it says. If you look at second 14, you can see it. But it looks like Santa Claus. So I can't really read what the joke is.
Oh, yeah.
But
Yeah. It looks like some kind of... Oh, you're talking about the air traffic controller. Yeah, it looks like there's some kind of thing there. I wonder if that's like a pull-up, you know, like one of those pull-away calendars.
You think it's, I don't think this is a calendar.
No.
I mean it
might be,
it's
like
probably like a Christmas card.
Okay. You know, I was gonna say sometimes, like, you know, on, you know, my dad used to have a Far Side calendar, like those like pull a days, you know, he might have just kept one and taped it on there. But yeah, it does look like a you can't really make it out. But there is, you know, something there, just to, you know, one of those mementos you would keep by your office desk, just to remind you of the outside world.
I did a search and I couldn't find it. I mean, it's you know, if you type in Santa cartoon sitting in lounge chair, you know, you're gonna get a hell of a lot of results.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, I was trying to figure out a way of trying to, you know, cut it down a little bit more. But, you know, because even if you add in Die Hard 2, that doesn't really help you. It gives you other things, but nothing. It gives you mostly pictures of Die Hard 2. Of course. You get one picture of John. You get one picture of John with a cigarette, and you see a Santa behind him. You know, that's as close as it gets.
Yeah.
You know, for this thing. So if anyone out there actually knows what this cartoon is and what it says, feel free to let us know.
Sure.
I'd be interested in finding out what it is that's in that cartoon bubble that Santa's in. Because you can see that he's got his hands behind his head, and there's like a lamp next to him and a Christmas tree on the other side. And yeah. You can see a clock. You know, he's apparently sitting in his living room. Mm-hmm. What is he saying? Maybe it says ho, ho, ho at the beginning, but that's about it. You know, that's, sorry. couldn't find that.
Yeah.
These things, I love catching these things in movies, and I love even more when you're able to figure out what it is. But this one is just it's just not focused enough for us to be able to tell what it is that's written there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just
And we don't get a poster shot at any point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now they built all of these control panels, right? This is all I'm trying to figure
out. It's all on a soundstage, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I wonder like what they use for reference. Cause the way this is built, where it's just, you know, it looks like it's just a monitor unit that's built into the desk, and he's wearing a headset, yet there's a phone that's right next to the monitor, and it just feels
well, that's just 1990. You remember, it's not like it's today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It just weird, because it feels like contradictory or redundant to have the phone there when he's wearing the headset. And I'm just like trying to figure out like what is the station actually meant to do other than just look at the monitor and say, yeah, that looks good.
No, apparently they're, you know, they normally are in contact with the planes.
Yes.
You know, maybe the phone is maybe to tell Trudeau.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And also he's holding a pen, but it doesn't look like there's any notes in front of him or even space.
Well, what type of notes is he going to write down? Mm-hmm. But that's actually not a pen.
Oh, really?
I think that's to be able to change on the screen, because that's how Stuart and his men changed it on the screen.
Oh, okay. It's a stylus.
I don't know if that's what they called it back in, you know, 33 years ago, but yeah. Hmm. So they might have had a different name back then.
Okay.
But yeah, that's not a normal pen. Maybe he's hoping that they're going to relinquish, you know, control, and then he'll be able to quickly fix it and say, "All right, guys, you're lower than you thought you are."
Okay.
I don't know. No way of us knowing that, unfortunately. Then the shot goes back, and we get to see Stuart once again. But right before it goes, we hear someone say in the background, "Fire and rescue, this is Cummings. Roll everything out to runway 29er. And again, I've never heard that before. I've never paid attention to that little line, you know, which is why it's great to sometimes look at, you know, look at the subtitles and actually pay attention to what's being said and what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that we then get a shot of Lorenzo actually using the binoculars. So I guess it goes to show that you know, as good as his eyesight was yesterday, today maybe he's missing up. You know, maybe he's getting a little he's having some tears. So it's much harder to see it with the naked eye. I don't know.
Do you think he's hoping McClane gets run over?
If they're able to save the people on the plane, maybe.
I'm just joking.
You don't have to. You can be serious. That's okay. Yeah. I have a feeling that Lorenzo might actually think that. You know, he's saying, okay, let him save the plane, but in the process, you know, get rid of this pain in the ass for me.
Yes. Yes.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And then. You know, the shot changes again. This is the first time we see a woman standing next to Trudeau talking into a walkie-talkie. And I'm trying to figure out who she's talking to and what she's doing. You know, the people are very busy in this movie.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because it, like noticing this now that because I remember later in the scene, there's a female voice that you hear and I'm trying to figure out, was that just, and I'm trying to figure out, did they just need to, you know, give the illusion that there was a woman in the control room and, but then no, you actually see that she's here.
Well, it could have also been ADR. You never know. That
oh, of course.
We don't know.
Yeah.
My assumption is that this movie has a lot of ADR.
Yes.
You know, you can tell.
Yes.
But it worked. It still helps, you know. Sure. I'm assuming the line I just read is also ADR'd. I don't think there was a guy really standing there, you know, I don't think Cummings is really there, whoever Cummings is, because he's not credited anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, telling them to get everything closer to run with you and Niner. And then Trudeau just looks as if he's lost it.
Oh, poor Senator Thompson.
Yeah. And then it goes back to Stuart, who is nice and he's smirking. And then we see Garber, who's smirking even more.
Yes.
You know, Garber's very happy. Then it goes back and we see Thompson, who looks a little scared. You know, he's the one who's actually causing these problems because he changed it on the ILS system.
Yeah. A little trepidatious, a little bit like we're the good guys, right? You know,
aren't we doing something good here?
yeah.
And then what's cool is they show us the screen and we see like an animation of the plane, you know, getting closer, and we can see on top it's pretty accurate. It says WSA flight 114. So, you know, Windsor Air. And then this is the altitude and the descent rate and the airspeed. And it says, but then it says dullest runway 25L.
Yeah.
So they got that one wrong.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see, I mean, because you have the visual representation and it's the kind of thing that if you're paying attention, this may seem redundant, but I'm sure there are plenty of people watching this who don't understand exactly how the bad guys are doing what they're doing. And this is just that one last exposition of like just the full actual visual representation of they're telling this plane it's 200 feet higher than it really is.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and it just because you see the blue line actually goes past
below. Yes.
Yeah. Past ground level.
Yeah, and then there's a whole bunch of other things that are on the screen that I don't really understand what they're trying to say.
You know,
it says ALM for R042.
Yeah.
And then it says ASPR INT AML D14.7.
Yeah.
You know, it's all you know, little jargon. You know,
yeah. Maybe,
you know, last week with Hal, we talked a little bit about it, that some of the stuff makes sense that we see on the screen and some of it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. And Renner does explain in the commentary that this screen was something that was built for the movie just because the science that they're using isn't actually real.
In our world.
Yeah, but but did make a point that he thought it was important to show this screen. You know, and for again, like I said, it's just to actually, you know, in case you haven't been following, we're just going to laying it all out right here, you know, right. Just for all you visual learners.
Exactly. And then, you know, we hear the navigator say ref speed plus 20, 600 feet. And then Stuart goes, looking good, Windsor. Now watch it. 30 knot crosswinds and the runway is icy. Attaboy. Yeah. We've gotcha.
Yeah. And you know, the determination in his face, you know, just
yes.
How focused his eyes and that wry little smile that's starting to form.
Yes. And we get a shot, an external shot of the plane descending. We see like the three lights and, you know, I think you can see John on the ground. No, you see the lights on the ground that we were trying to find yesterday and we couldn't find.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And what's funny is in the special features on the Blu-ray, they actually show that Oh no, it's not this sequence. It's one that's later, but it's similar where there's like eight different locations that are going on here.
Yes, I've seen that one. I've seen that one. That's when Esperanza's plane lands.
Yeah, but yeah, and at this point that is a shot of an actual plane landing.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah,
that is correct. John is not really there. Mm-hmm. Bruce Willis is not really there, but they do get the shot of a plane landing. And we see John screams, "No, pull up!" You know, as he's still, waving those sticks. Do you know what the real terminology is for
No.
It's called aircraft marshalling.
Okay.
Which is visual signaling between ground personnel and pilots.
Yeah.
And it could be at an airport, aircraft carrier, or on a helipad.
Yeah, you guys with the little short orange lightsabers.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. The usual equipment is they have a reflective safety vest, the helmet with acoustic earmuffs, and gloves. Or do you know what those little glowing miniature lightsabers are called?
No.
They're called marshalling wands or handheld illuminated beacons.
Wands. Okay. Interesting. My grandfather served in the Navy, and he was a signalman. Which basically was used that same type of, I mean, he used like flags, but that same type of thing where he was actually communicating between boats. It wasn't on an aircraft carrier, but it's the same type of principle where you're trying to use hand signals to communicate across long distances.
Right. And I mean, basically, this is mostly used in an airport for, for planes that are on the ground. Actually, it's not mostly, it's only used for planes that are on the ground, where they want them to turn, slow down, stop, shut down engines. They lead them to to where they're supposed to park or to the runway. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they could be in like a little car that, for them to follow them and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The taxiing. Yeah.
And in you see this in movies like Top Gun and stuff like that. The marshals are usually wearing fluorescent garments, with different colors in order for them to know, who they're dealing with it. And so, during daylight hours, they use what are known as high visibility paddles, which are slightly different than these little lightsabers. And at night, they need to use these self-illuminating wands.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean it makes sense.
yeah.
And the reason that it's so important is because the visibility that the pilots have because they're so high up isn't always that great. So you need to make sure that they can actually see what's going on.
Yeah.
Now he also mentioned Stuart mentions about the fact that there's 30 knot crosswind. So I don't know anything about the wind speed and stuff like that, but what I decided to look up one is 30 like what's considered a dangerous amount of wind, right? So I actually found an article that talked about it, and it says that high winds usually result in flights being delayed from taking off. But during landing, it's less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you have crosswinds that if they're in excess of 30 or 35 knots, they won't let people take off or land in general.
Oh.
Okay. But if the crosswind is over 40, okay, then the problem is this won't put, according to this article, obviously, it doesn't put your flight in any real danger. The idea is just to minimize the possibility of something happening. So even if it's much higher, it's a question of just being aware of the fact of how many knots the winds are, but it doesn't really matter. It's not saying, okay, it's too much, so don't land at this point, at least. He's giving him advice saying 30 knot crosswinds, so you're good. Just be aware that it's 30 knot crosswinds. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit over the last few weeks. Now, my assumption is that Stuart and his men are actually trained to deal with aircraft and things like that. You know, it's not something that they could have learned in these few days when they needed to prepare for this whole thing. You know, so even the terminology that Stuart is using, you know, he may be a colonel in the Army. He doesn't necessarily know all of this terminology. But if part of what they do in their special ops is, you know, I don't know, create or take over, you know, airports, little airports or whatever it is, even, you know, so that they're at least going to understand the jargon and what they're supposed to say.
Yeah, or even if they have pilots on the crew, you know, on the crew themselves, you know, would know all the terminology and know all the things that they would have to compensate for and be aware
true,
of.
But these guys are all supposed to be Army, so I doubt that any of them would be officially designated as pilots. Well, unless they're people who have pilot training.
I mean, even the Army has pilots. You know, every branch except the Coast Guard has pilots. You know, whether it's for airplanes or helicopters.
Wait, the Coast Guard doesn't have. They don't have Coast Guard helicopters.
That's true. I don't know, but even so, you know, I mean, you know, even, you know, you see Navy, you know, whether it's Navy SEALs or whatever, they're all, you know, a lot of them are traveling on helicopters or, you know, C-130s or anything. So I'm sure some of them probably have some kind of flight training.
Right. Okay. That's true. And they're probably also guys that like to do extreme. So they're going to, you know, yeah, they're going to go learn how to do these things on their own free time.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah, and you know, John screams no pull up, like they're really supposed to hear him.
you know, same, you know, yeah. When you're watching someone else playing a video game, you just want to scream at them, you know, or just, you know, your favorite sports team is screwing up. It's like, no, pass to him.
Or listen to a podcast. No, that's not. Come on, don't you know what you're talking about? So yeah, okay, that is fair. Mm-hmm. And you know, then we get a shot back in the plane itself. You know, after he screams pull up, and you know, we see the shot from the cockpit showing how close the ground is. Now, do you notice that there's no snow on the ground here?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, John is in an area that is completely covered in snow, but they found a little patch to land on or to crash into. That doesn't have any snow on it.
Yeah.
You know, and this way they have the marking, and therefore, you know, O'Brien and his compatriots mm-hmm. actually know that they're about to hit the ground.
Yeah. 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 You actually see, yeah, and everything is paved. You know, you could see all, right. You know, all the street painting and right. All they could do is just, you know, wait, because it's too late. It's too late.
That's right. And I love how you know, we see that the co-pilot covers his you know, takes his arms, grabs his arms up and screams Jesus, and puts his arms in front of his face like that's gonna really help him.
Yeah.
But O'Brien continues, and he's mm-hmm. you know, he's still doing all he can to the last very second to try to save that plane.
Yep.
And then we see this model plane, you know, crash.
And this is great model work.
Yes. I mean, and the fact that they're able to break both of those, both of the wheels. And then, you know, one of the engines hits the ground and again, no snow, and starts to spark.
Yeah.
You know, that's done really well also. The external shot of that. And then we see it like land on its back. And then they give us a shot that Rennie Harlan fought really hard to get. And that is a shot of people inside the plane realizing what's going on and that they're all about to die. Including the little old lady that they comforted, you know, last week, that don't worry, you know, we'll get you on the ground in no time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure she's screaming at the stewardess, this is not like British Rail.
Maybe it is. I didn't do any research on you know how many crashes they've had on British Rail. So you never know. Anything is possible there. And you know we get to see like luggage fall out of the overhead compartments, and people are really panicking here.
Yeah,
and then
yeah, and I know Harlan filmed more from the inside, and he talks about.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more.
Yeah, about but I'm just saying this is all you need. Like this is, you don't need any more than that to illustrate the horror of what these people are going through.
Yeah, for sure. No, he knew what he was. A lot of times when directors go to convince them to, you know, to not cut certain things, they know what's going to get cut. So they play the game in order to keep certain things that they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the give and take. And then we get another shot of the plane, and we see the wing start to be engulfed by a flame as it skids on the runway. And then the fire just gets larger and larger, but it only still engulfed one of the two engines at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's how this minute ends.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute before we get into the script?
I did find it interesting that because it says Windsor right there.
Yes, that Windsor Air.
Windsor Air, and that they wouldn't use a real airline like British Airways. I thought that was
interesting. You're surprised?
Well.
Why would they? British Airways would let them use this to destroy the plane?
That's true. That's true. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. I'm curious to see how they came to choose Windsor, as the name of the airline.
You know. Again, they have other flights the other planes that we've seen so far. We saw Fuji Air.
Yeah.
Which isn't a real airline. We've seen Northeast. You know, NEA is the flight that Holly's on, which the real Northeast airline. Was bought up by I think Delta in 1971. So
okay,
you know it's also a fake name of a mm-hmm. of a plane. So mm-hmm. I was actually shocked. I talked about this a few weeks ago that you know they mentioned budget, you know budget rent-a-car that they actually mm-hmm. allowed them I guess to use the name.
Hmm.
But I mean nothing bad happens here. This isn't Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, so you know nothing happens there. That's right. So the script actually has a lot of added dialogue that's not in the movie. So it starts off with it starts off with Colmini saying, "Wait a minute, something down there through the snow looks like a light." And then says Stuart is puzzled but covers himself by saying, "Probably our runway system's coming back up. Don't worry about it if you're coming in on instruments." And the pilot goes, "Roger, flaps down, airspeed 100 knots, 80, 70. The navigator says, RVR, quarter mile, altitude 1,000 feet, 800, reference, plus 20. The McLean can now hear the plane's engines, and for a fleeting moment, he sees its lights between gusts of snow. McLean, no, no, Jesus, Mary, Mother of God, no, pull up, pull up. In the tower there, helpless, listening, watching, the plane's lights intermittently visible here. Growing closer, dropping, dropping. The navigator says, 600 feet. Looking good, Windsor. Watch it. There's a 30-knot crosswind, and the runway's icy. Mm-hmm. Attaboy, attaboy. And then the navigator says, 400 feet, 200. In the cockpit, suddenly, from out of the darkness, the crew sees the runway right under them. Jesus! The pilot slams the controls. The plane tilts. Engines screaming. The crew, brilliant and skilled. But it's not enough. Not enough. The nose comes up, but the wingtip dips, catching the tarmac, and that's all it takes. The plane flips over, rolls. Inside the tumbling plane, luggage tumbles in the cabin. People scream. For a split second, we hear the scream of men, women, and children, and then all we hear and see is an explosion. So it's very descriptive.
Yeah, and that extra dialogue is unnecessary, and I think it would give you too much time to think.
That's right. Yeah, it's not needed. Even the part where he sees McClane, or he thinks he sees McClane, that's not needed. That's just doesn't work.
Yeah.
All right. So every Tuesday I have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, where I try and find some type of airplane disaster that's happened that is somewhat related to my guest from a geographical perspective. So, and usually there's somebody who passed away who was killed on the plane that we know or anything like that. So do you have any guess as to what I might have chosen for you?
I'm trying to figure out like how close to Staten Island you got, or if it was something that was just in the general New York area.
I got very close to Staten Island.
Oh, okay. All right. It's because I know there was an old airfield that's actually not too far from where I live right now that was active during World War II.
No, we're not going to go far that. We're not going that far back. I'll give you it's definitely connected to JFK.
Okay. Then I don't know. I don't know what's coming.
So I wanted to talk about TWA flight 800.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember, how old were you in 96? Do you remember that?
I would have been 8 years old. I do remember seeing it on television, seeing the coverage of it on TV. And you know, a lot of the mystery as to, you know, what exactly happened and how it happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So on July 17th, 1996, at around 8:31 p.m., there was a flight leaving JFK on its way to Paris, or actually, it was on its way to Rome with a stopover in Paris. The plane basically exploded in midair 12 minutes after takeoff. 230 people that were on board died in the crash. It is known as the third deadliest aviation accident in U.S. history. It took more than 4 years for them to finish the investigation, the NTSB, to try and figure out what exactly happened. They basically had the most extensive, complex, and costly air disaster investigation in U.S. history at the time, which obviously when they finished it in August of 2000, just a year later, they were going to get something a little bit more complex that they were going to have to deal with. The conclusion of the report was that the probable cause of the accident was an explosion of flammable fuel vapors in the central fuel tank. But they still do not know this. Think about it. It's been 20 years, 23 years since they filed the report, and there's still questions as to whether that's what happened or if maybe there was a short circuit. There are we'll get to this in a second. There are a lot of conspiracy theories about the whole thing.
Yes.
There are the captain apparently had reported that he had gotten a whole bunch of crazy readings from one of the systems about 2.5 minutes before the explosion. So there were 230 people that were on this plane, including 18 crew members and 20 off-duty employees. Most of them were people who were going to be the crew between the Paris-Rome leg of the flight. Of the 18 crew members, 17 of them were Americans, and one of them was Italian. Of the passengers, 152 of them were Americans. Some of the notable people that were on this plane, I don't recognize any of the names, but maybe some people will recognize some of them. Michel Breistoff, who was a French ice hockey player. Marcel Dadi, who was a French guitarist. Lawrence Harris was an American fashion photographer. David Hogan, an American composer. Jed Johnson, who was Andy Warhol's partner for 12 years. Pam Leitchner, who was a crime victims rights advocate. And she herself was a former TWA flight attendant. Rico Pullman, who was a German fashion photographer. Courtney Johns, who was the sister of Jeff Johns and was the inspiration. She was the inspiration for who?
Stargirl, the superhero Stargirl.
Courtney Whitmore.
Yes, Courtney Whitmore, who Johns wrote in comics in the early 2000s and was adapted into a series on the CW in the late in the early 2020s that I was actually a big fan of and talked about a lot on the DC TV report.
All right, very cool. There were 16 students and 5 adult chaperones from the French Club at from a school in Pennsylvania that were also on board. At the time, the amount of web traffic, I mean, this is 1996. People weren't using the web as much, but the web traffic, the web traffic set records for internet activity at the time. CNN's traffic quadrupled, and they had 4 million viewers views per day. The New York Times website had a traffic increase to 1.5 million views per day, which was 50% higher than what they had beforehand. And back in 1996, there were few government websites that were updated daily, but the U.S. Navy crash website was constantly updated and had detailed information about the salvage of the crash site. So I mentioned earlier about the fact that there were conspiracy theories about this.
Yes.
To this day, there are people who still believe that either it was a terrorist missile strike, that or there was a bomb on board, or maybe there was a Navy missile test that went wrong that caused it. There was a documentary that came out in 2013 that alleges that the report that they gave was just a cover-up, and they actually found 6 members of the original investigation team that were all retired at the time, that were now retired in 2013, that all filed a petition to reopen the probe because something was not right. Now, I'm a fan of Nelson DeMille. Have you ever read any of his books?
I've heard of him, but I've never read anything written by him.
Okay, so he has a series of books about police officer named John Corey, who one of his books, and this is actually, if I remember correctly, the first book I read of his, is called Nightfall. The book Nightfall, it revolves around the fact that there's a couple who witnessed and videotaped the crash, and they saw some sort of they saw something stream up from the ground, and the whole book takes place there. And he ties it into 9/11 and stuff. It's really interesting the way the whole thing plays out. I don't know what I believe. I'm not going to say that I believe completely what the report says or not. I don't know enough about that. I liked it. It's a great book.
I think just being a little kid at the time, that was the kind of thing where, like, so you heard about it on the news, but you didn't really quite understand, and I do remember there being a lot of speculations as to whether it was a terrorist attack or something else, just real tragedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really was.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Lil Eddie O'Hare. And you can also listen to my capsule movie reviews on the Super Live Adventure podcast, which drops Tuesdays, by the way, hosted by John Zaluga and Chris Sorrentino. And if you want to catch up on some of my previous work, you could hear me on the Wicked Theory podcast and the DC TV report. And I just recently recorded with Sarah Netsley and Bill Sweeney a DC TV report reunion, celebrating the series finale of The Flash and the end of the Arrowverse. So it was a fun little retrospective and little. Hey, how you doing? It's been a while. Check that out. And I do have something else I'm have in development that I'm hoping to record a pilot for in the next week or so. But I'll have more information for that come minute 60.
All right. You're doing that spoiler dropping again. There you go. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and